Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
At this point, it's going to be that the 61st Annual National Day of Prayer is going to be the largest.
A lot of our groups hold rallies and protests outside the state capitol because, as we know, there are a lot of leaders and politicians who don't really support the National Day of Reason and are more likely to support prayer.
We call it America's Night of Hope. It's 2.5 hours of music and inspiration and just going to try to lift people's spirits and let them know that there are good days up ahead.
Happy days are here again.
The future belongs to those churches who dare to confess their doctrine.
Washington jet drivers love issues, etc.
We can often do the wrong thing, tragically wrong thing, for the right reasons. And to say nothing of the motivation or the commitment of pro-lifers state by state, I read in the Washington Post from just a little bit more than a week ago, the headline, Oklahoma Court Halts Effort to Grant Personhood Rights to Embryos, says it's unconstitutional. I'm no lawyer, but there is a problem with a lot of these personhood amendments, and it's not the motivation or the commitment of the pro-lifers who are trying to push them in various states into constitutions through the amendment process. It's with the premise of the personhood amendments. We're going to talk about that. These personhood proposals are going state by state. Do they really argue in favor of the unborn in the way that they ought to? Or do they actually concede ground to, well, now an almost 40-year debate over legalized abortion? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon. It's the 7th of May. Bob Perry will join us from Life Training Institute to talk about these personhood proposals a little bit later. Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be our guest. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson talking about Paul and Silas in prison. How did they get in prison and what happens after they are divinely sprung from prison in Acts chapter 16? Dr. Andrew Steinman will join us. Wycliffe Bible translators are taking a lot of heat from evangelicals because they have been working on a translation of the Bible that is supposed to be suited to the Muslim religion and culture. And so they're leaving out things like God as Father, Jesus as Son. They say they're too easily misunderstood in a Muslim culture, and so they're trying to find a way around it. And evangelicals are saying, you can't, not and keep the integrity of the Bible. Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University, Chicago, will join us to talk about Bible translations geared for Muslims. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesetc.org, or you can send us a tweet at issuesetc. Bob Perry is a speaker with Life Training Institute, an instructor with crossexamine.org, and author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Personhood's Fatal Flaw. Bob, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
You say that these personhood arguments, the personhood proposals and amendments, are operating on the same premise, and this is shocking, but I want you to explain it, the same premise that was used by the Roe Court almost 40 years ago to permit abortion on demand.
Yes, and let me reiterate what you said, Todd. I am not in any way questioning the motives or dedication of any pro-lifer. We're all on the same team here. And this article was actually born out of my own misunderstanding about this subject. Because when I read and heard about personhood amendments that said that they wanted, the goal was to make a personhood start at conception, that sounded really good to me. That makes perfect sense to me. Who could be against that? And again, not I don't want to say against, but who could see it a different way? So I started looking into it and working through some of this with some of my colleagues to try to make it clearer for me, because I was honestly confused about the issue. And when you go back and look, what you find out is that in the Roe v. Wade decision, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution was born out of the Civil War. the mistreatment, subhuman treatment of African American slaves. And so to remedy that, the 14th Amendment said that all persons would be protected from being deprived of their life, liberty, or property. Well, Harry Blackmun, member of the Supreme Court back during the Roe v. Wade decision, saw in that a way to distinguish between all human beings and some human beings who his goal was to find a way to make abortion legal. And so he constructed this idea that there was a difference between a human being and a human person. He created a distinction there and said that if you weren't yet a human person, then the 14th Amendment didn't apply to you. And he used that to exclude what he thought were pre-persons from being protected by the 14th Amendment. So this idea of personhood came out of that, and it's an exclusive idea. You know, we pro-lifers believe that all human beings are valuable in virtue of our nature, what we are intrinsically. But the personhood idea says that there are some people, some human beings, who aren't quite up to speed yet, that they're not worthy of protection. And so it leaves those people out. And my point in the article was to say that when we argue the personhood of someone to try to, even for the noble goal of ending abortion, we are arguing from the same ground that Harry Blackmun used to create this idea, this justification for abortion in the first place.
Okay, now the proponents of the personhood amendments might say, well, you might be right there, Bob, but if you read our amendments, we are trying to say that personhood applies from the moment of conception, from the moment of fertilization. And so we don't mean to exclude any single human being. We think all human beings are persons. And what's your response?
Well, I again, that's why I was confused about this. I 100% agree with not only their motives, but what they're trying to do here. What I'm talking about is the premise, it's a faulty premise to begin with the idea that we have to establish personhood to say that some human beings, or that all human beings, are protected by law. So when we're arguing we're trying to move the point where we become a person. So when we do that, we are giving ground to the pro-abortionists to say that's something that's up for debate. And my point is that the personhood, there should be no, it should be a continuum from the moment of conception to the day we die, of that a human being is a human being and is valuable for that reason alone. We should not even enter the debate trying to decide when we become a person and therefore valuable and worthy of protection.
So even if these personhood amendments are trying to argue that all human beings are de facto persons, to take up the false distinction between human beings and persons, that is the premise there, is an Achilles heel in the argument and does not ultimately argue in favor of the protection of the unborn, unwittingly.
Right. And I think the proof is in the pudding. These things continue to fail. Colorado, I think, has failed twice. Virginia, Mississippi is what prompted me writing the article. Nevada, and then just this past week, Oklahoma. So the track record's not good, and I'm not saying that the motivation isn't good. I'm not saying that I don't agree with what the personhood movement is trying to do. What I'm saying is look at the results. It seems like we need to take a different strategy because, you know, in the article I point out that when you start arguing for when someone becomes a person, you end up with bizarre ideas. That you start to try to equate things that really are irrelevant and false about the whole abortion argument. For instance, I don't know if you have time for me to get into it, but I was in a debate with someone on my personal blog about this idea, and this person wanted to insist that we shouldn't refer to in order to cover all the bases about whether we're talking about an embryo or a fetus or all that. This person said, well, we should just call it an ESLO. He had an acronym, ESLHO, which was an early stage living human organism. And, you know, that's kind of a euphemism for something that he doesn't want to have protected by law. And he said, this Eslo doesn't become a person until 24 weeks. So I brought up the point that there have been premature babies born at 21 weeks who survived. And I said, so are you telling me that those are not yet persons? And he said, that's right. He said, you could be born living in an incubator in a hospital somewhere, but not be a person until 24 weeks. This is where you end up with like people like Peter Singer, who try to argue that because you're not self-aware yet, even after birth, he'll say weeks or months after birth, you're not yet a human person, and therefore not worthy of protection. We heard about after-birth abortion here in the last couple weeks.
So basically what you're saying is the whole personhood premise introduces a set of criteria that are irrelevant ethically to the debate. The only thing that's relevant ethically to the debate is, are these human beings, period?
Correct. That's my point exactly. And when, you know, I quoted, what prompted this was someone sent me an article by a Notre Dame philosophy professor, Gary Gutting, from the New York Times, who talked about how this personhood referendum had gone down in Mississippi. And he said that most Americans, even strong opponents of abortion, are reluctant to treat a fertilized egg as a human person. So what he's comparing there are two things that actually don't even exist. There is no such thing as a fertilized egg. Once the egg is fertilized, it becomes a new thing. It's not an egg anymore. This is a term that gets thrown around all the time that has absolutely no meaning. But it's used because it sounds like it's not really a real human being yet, so we can treat it differently. And he compares that with a human person, which is another construction made by Harry Blackmun. And so we're left comparing things that aren't even real.
Let's take a break. When we come back, more with Bob Perry on personhood proposals. We'll talk about some premises that may work, that may be a better strategy and a better legal strategy in the abortion debate.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about personhood proposals on this Monday, May the 7th. Bob Perry, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Personhood's Fatal Flaw, is our guest. Let's talk about kind of backing up and coming at this again, because some might say, well, what alternative do we have to these personhood proposals? Is there a different way of approaching the debate when it comes to intrinsic human worth?
Sure. I ended the article with a little appeal for that. And again, I'm no philosopher. I'm not a legal scholar. But when you can work with someone like Hadley Arkus, who has talked about these things and does have the credentials to speak to it, he thinks that we should introduce legislation the old-fashioned way. And what he means by that is, in time gone by, legislation was produced that with a preamble, kind of like the preamble to our Constitution, that gave the intent and the reasons behind the legislation that was being brought up. It set the premises for the law and gave the goals and whatever where the law was headed and why we're talking about it. And what he suggests is that we start to introduce bills that cite premises, first of which is to cite the scientific definition of what a human being is and where that begins. That begins with at conception. But this, the way he's talking about doing it is that to say that it's a genetically distinct human being from that moment until the day it dies. It's unique. It's living. It's a human being. It's a member of the human species. This takes away the idea that we're arguing from some religious idea. This is a scientific fact. You can look in an embryology textbook to find this out. Then a second premise might be to set forth the philosophical case that there is no moral difference between the early stage embryo that we're talking about and you and I today that would justify killing us at that earlier stage. Once you have that kind of a preamble to set the stage, you introduce a bill that says that any justification for taking human life must be consistent for the justification allowed by the law for taking any other innocent human life. And so now you, instead of being on the defensive and trying to argue for how we want to move personhood to an earlier point in the debate, we have the pro-abortion people now have to make the case for either why it isn't scientifically true that a new embryo is a human being, or what makes it morally different and unworthy of protection. Now they're on the defensive. And this could be, the big debate here is through incremental legislation that chips away at Roe v. Wade, because the reality is we're stuck with Roe v. Wade, and we have been able to chip away at it through partial birth abortion bans and things like that. So that if any time we do that, no, it's not the ultimate goal we want. No, it's not the place we want to end up at the end, but we are limiting and stopping some abortions. We're saving some lives, and when we do that, we're moving closer and closer to our goal, because frankly, this argument, this scientific and philosophical argument that argues for the reality of a human being scientifically, and then gives forces the opponent to say why that is not worthy of protection, what the differences are, is wildly popular with the younger generation. The younger generation coming up now, those in their 20s, say college-age kids are latching onto this as a human rights issue, and it may take years. We may not see it in our lifetime. I don't know. I hope that's not true. But the fact is that if we can introduce legislation like this, that maybe it's incremental, and some personhood people don't like that idea. But if we can do that, we can slowly chip away until we can defeat this once and for all.
And it doesn't have the loophole of the trap door. What concerns me about the personhood amendment is that it basically puts to a vote, albeit sometimes petitions on a signature and then, a referendum for constitutional amendments, but it puts to a vote who is and who isn't a person. If you can vote on it once and move the line, let's say it gets moved back to fertilization, well, future generations can vote and move that line any place they want it to be.
Exactly. It's a subjective thing. There is no concrete moral foundation for what constitutes who's a person and who's not. It's up to the electorate to decide where they want to move that line.
So more generally, you are basically saying that pro-lifers need to kind of dispense with the whole person, non-person distinction that they may not even recognize is implicit in their advocacy for personhood.
Exactly. I think it is hidden, and that's why I want to really emphasize what I said at the beginning, that I came at this issue from someplace where I didn't understand what the problem was. Why do these things keep failing? What is there something hidden in there? And that's what it is. There's a hidden presumption in there that we can decide by vote who's a person and who isn't, and that's just morally indefensible. And again, I don't fault those who are doing this. I understand their goals. They're honorable, noble people who have the same exact goal as I do. I just think we need to reconsider how we're doing it if it's not working.
Does it also, again, gradually require that the debate be held on the objective ethical grounds rather, even by those who are proponents of abortion? Sooner or later, they're going to have to come on our ground and make their arguments.
Right, exactly. I long for the day when I can see some judge try to defend the idea that a brand new embryo at conception is scientifically not a human being. I want to see that, because it's going to show that it's going to strain credulity to hear somebody try to make that case. I also want to see the philosophical case that tries to distinguish that between you and I today and what we once were. We make them be on the defensive, and when we do it that way, is the way I look at it. And I think that's a better position to argue your case from, especially when the truth, the reality of the situation is on our side.
What you mentioned earlier, Hadley Arkus, and he's been on the show several times. And one of the things the last time we talked to him that he found shocking, he passed along to us and our listeners, was that in dealing with students in New York, he found students who are more than willing to admit philosophically and scientifically that the embryo is a human being, but they held with their idea that some human beings should be protected and other human beings shouldn't. They were even willing to go so far as to talk about infanticide. Should we prepare ourselves for those kind of shocking and inhumane arguments to be accepted and made?
Absolutely. And, when I brought up the idea of the ESLO, the early stage living human organism, that I was in a debate with a guy about. And I'll tell you what, you hear some shocking things. This guy defended Margaret Sanger. I could see that. He thought the eugenics movement was a good idea. He thought that the world was overpopulated and we need to reduce that. He even justified cannibalism, because he has a naturalistic worldview that says that we are just a bag of meat. So to me, when you hear that kind of argument, that's so shocking that even people who may be trying to defend abortion, when they hear people take it that far, or Peter Singer, after birth abortion type ideas, I think we are made in the image of God. We have a moral center, whether we acknowledge it or not. When you hear those kind of arguments, I think that does something for our side to say, what are you really saying here? Think about it. And I think that's powerful.
So put this in a nutshell for us, considering that there are listeners right now who are hearing us who up to this point have not had any reason to question the personhood amendments or the personhood proposals. In a nutshell, how would you tell them to reconsider this?
I would start with saying, listen, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the personhood movement becomes wildly victorious and we all benefit from that. But look at the results we've seen so far. The strategy doesn't seem to be working. And I think we need to recognize. For me, it was an eye-opening experience to hear how Harry Blackmun reasoned to create this idea of personhood. And when you hear that and you understand that was a totally fabricated construction meant to justify abortion, then if you're arguing just that you need to move that point further back than Harry Blackmun did, that maybe you're on some shifting sands there, that you need to reconsider the premises of the argument you're making. And I think we need to shift it from that subjective idea that we can move that that point wherever we want to the objective idea that all human beings are made in the image of God, are valuable for that reason alone, for their intrinsic nature, and they deserve to be protected at every point of their life for that reason. That is a far stronger argument, I think, than trying to decide when someone becomes a person and is or is not a person.
Bob Perry is a speaker with Life Training Institute and instructor with CrossExamine.org and author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Personhood's Fatal Flaw. We'll post a link to his blog at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bob, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to be spending some time with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, editor of Witness Mercy Life Together for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll talk about Paul and Silas in prison in Acts chapter 16. How did they end up in jail? And then Dr. Andrew Steinman will join us to talk about Bible translations for Muslims that avoid the Trinity. And in the last segment of the program, Mark Pearson will join us to discuss unanswered prayers. Is Christianity merely one limited half-true perspective on God? Find out in an article I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled, The Blind Men and the Elephant, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Christian Teve's journey from the agnosticism of a committed Darwinist to faith in Jesus Christ. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Our nation's most pro-abortion president has a big problem. Chinese human rights advocate Chen Quancheng brought world attention to forced abortion in China. As a result, this blind man and his wife were arrested and suffered many beatings. But Chen made a dramatic escape from house arrest and is believed to be in the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. This all happened right before a big meeting with Secretary of State Clinton and a top Chinese official to discuss economic issues. In the past, Secretary Clinton's made it clear the human rights issue won't get in the way of global warming and economics. But they can't ignore this. Major media is trying to ignore Chen, as this issue would more fully expose China's brutal forced abortion policy. Let's be in constant prayer for Chen and his family.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.